Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for taking time to join us. Taking some time, because we know how busy you are, how busy we all are. That's what we're talking about today, busyness. Americans are known for it. We take fewer than half the vacation days many Europeans do. And we are one of the very few countries in the world with no mandated paid maternity leave. The same goes for sick leave. We are a culture that emphasizes productivity, not siestas and five-course meals. In fact, Americans more and more report that they often do not have time to sit down together for family meals. It wasn't supposed to be this way. In 1930, economist John Maynard Keynes predicted that by 2030, we'd have a 15-hour work week. Instead, surveys show that a large percentage of Americans work at least 50 hours a week, 50, not 15. How did we get here? What public policy changes would make a difference? And what can we do now as individuals to feel less frazzled? My guests today have put a lot of thought into these questions. Former Washington Post reporter Bridget Schulte is the author of Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. She also directs the Better Life Lab at the New America think tank, where she works on gender equity, work-life balance, and social policy. She joins us by phone from Washington, D.C. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Also with us by phone is author and documentary filmmaker John DeGraff. John is executive director of Take Back Your Time, an organization that seeks to challenge, quote, the epidemic of overwork, overscheduling, and time famine in North America. John DeGraff, I'm glad you could join us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, and let me start with you. Where has our time gone? When did it start slipping away and how?
Pardon me, I missed that.
I ask, where has our time gone? When did it start slipping away?
Well, it's gone to more work, for one thing, but it's also gone to a much hurried schedule, the idea that we have to simply put so many things into our lives and do so many things. But we are seeing, I think, particularly as inequality has increased and things have become much more competitive, people are working harder and longer, in many cases to keep up, in other cases because the rewards are so great to those at the top from working long and hard. So I think inequality is a very major cause of the increase in work that's happened over the last few years. One thing I noticed, I mean, we really are a country that works like crazy, more than almost all other rich countries. And I noticed that last night's convention message at the GOP convention was Make America Work Again. And I thought that's pretty ironic in a country that works as much as we do. And I kind of wish that the theme was Let America Play Again.
Let America Play Again. If you could back off from your phone a little bit, we're getting a little bit of voice pressure. So I want to make sure I'm understanding. It seemed to me that you're saying that the busyness I'm asking about, that it's not just a middle class thing, that it affects all socioeconomic levels?
Well, the sense of being harassed by time pressures affects all levels. I don't think at the poor levels people are as busy by choice. I think they're busy often because they're simply have to work two or three jobs to keep up, or they're single parents who have obligations for children as well as trying to put food on the table and all of those things. So I don't think those kids are nearly as overscheduled or people are deliberately scheduling to the same degree. But overwork does affect us across the society.
But you're focusing in particular then, John DeGraff, on busy by choice.
Well, I'm not. I think most of this is not necessarily by choice. I think it's due to the structure of our society. I just heard a young Finnish writer speak last night who wrote a book called The Nordic Theory of Everything. Her name is Anu Partanen. And she made some really important points about how she came to the United States from Finland, and she ended up working so much more and being so much more busy because life was simply so complicated. So many things that she took for granted in Finland, free health care, education, all of these kinds of things, simple choices around, you know, not having a million different options to look at and to try to figure out between really made life much, much easier for her and gave her more free time when she lived in Finland. And when she got here, she was in for a shock at how busy she had to be, not by choice, but by the design of our and structure of our economic system.
That's interesting. Bridget Schulte, play. John DeGraff mentioned a minute ago, Let America Play Again. Play is part of the title of your book. The subtitle is Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. How did you come to write a book about overwhelmed?
Right. And really what the book is a lot about is sort of exploring through data and research and story what John was talking about, that really that this kind of exploring this overwork culture that we have in the United States. I think it's really important to remember that in the United States, hard work has always been a part of the American work ethic. You know, we talk about the Protestant work ethic. You know, people who came to America, we tend to be a nation of restless immigrants. You know, so that hard work is something that we've always valued and is part of the American culture. But I think when you look at the trend lines, starting in about the 1980s, we really moved from hard work into overwork, particularly in the higher, more knowledge and higher educated for that demographic, for that population. So that, we have this value of work. We tend to not value leisure time or play. We think that it's unproductive or a waste of time. As you mentioned in the introduction, we are the only advanced economy that does not have a national vacation policy, paid vacation policy, unless you want to include Nepal and Suriname. And John's done some really wonderful documentaries on this. So part of it is really you have to go back to what we consider American values, American culture. And while hard work is really important and is part of, and that productivity is part of American culture, we've really kind of gone off the rails because all of the research shows that you get to a certain point, and it depends on which study you look at, but like 50 to 55 hours, you can kind of push yourself for a while. But if you continue that sustained pace of overwork, you fall off a cliff and you are no longer productive. You are headed for burnout. And what you really need for doing effective work, for doing good work, is exactly what a number of other countries, just about every other country but ours, has figured out, which is you need time to play. You need time off. That actually time away from work makes work better.
That is Bridget Schulte here on Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass. Bridget Schulte directs the Better Life Lab and the Good Life Initiative at the think tank New America. Also with us is John DeGraff, author, documentary filmmaker, executive director of Take Back Your Time, an organization that's trying to change exactly this trend that we're talking about. And listeners, you can be part of this conversation. Is your to-do list never ending? Do you find yourself rushing from one thing to the next? Do you have some ideas about managing that or how we got into this situation? Call us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Bridget Schulte, you write that you talked to a time use researcher, is actually a sociologist at the University of Maryland, who told you that you Bridget Schulte, had 30 hours of leisure time a week. And that was your reaction.
I know. Well, actually, I laugh now. I think at the time when he told me that, I fell off my chair I wanted to hit him over the head with my phone or something. Right, and that's really that's what sparked the whole book project, the looking at all of these issues. Honestly, when I had that conversation with John Robinson, he is a time use researcher, I was working full-time at the Washington Post, working crazy hours because that's what I thought it entailed, always sort of feeling rushed and pressured. I had two small children, like many people, even though my husband and I had promised to be equal partners, somehow I'd found myself doing everything. I was sort of the default parent and, you know, doctor me, dentist me, summer camp plans me, babysitting me, kids are sick. I take time off. I used to say I felt like my husband had a career and I just tried not to get fired. So I was just completely overwhelmed all the time, never feeling like I was doing enough at work, never feeling like I was doing enough at home. You know, the cat was scratching things and people told me I needed to spend more time with the cat. I'm like, are you kidding? Can I just squirt water at him? So I just absolutely out of my mind, felt like my hair was on fire. And I was doing a project for the Washington Post, and we were looking at time and people reading the newspaper at the time. And so we figured, well, you know, women aren't reading the paper so much because they're so busy. And so many people had that experience. All of my friends, everybody that I knew, we were all just basically hanging on by our fingernails. And a lot of times you get so busy you don't even have time to think about why or if there's another way to do it or if you have a choice. You just kind of feel like, well, this is it. This is the only way it can be. And that's certainly what I thought. And so in the middle of all this, I talked to this time use researcher, and he's like, no, women aren't busy. Women have 30 hours of leisure a week. They have plenty of time to read the newspaper. And I did. I just about fell off my chair, and I said, you're nuts. I do not have 30 hours of leisure. And he said, yes, you do. Do a time study, and I will show you where it is. And so that's really what started this entire project. I did a time study. I tracked my time. I would start on a Monday and then forget by Wednesday what I'd done on Tuesday. You know, it's just like, he did. He found 27 hours of what he called leisure time. And I looked at it, and I nearly burst into tears because it was bits and scraps of, like, kind of, I called it in-between time or time confetti. It just didn't add up to anything. And it wasn't anything that, you know, when you think of leisure time or play, you know, I was thinking of, like, being in a hammock on a beach with, like, a fruity drink. It's like there was none of that in my schedule. And so that was a really... to me, the spark of the journey for the book, but a very important lesson that I later learned from talking to leisure researchers, that leisure and play, it's like beauty. It's in the eye of the beholder. It's how you feel about that time and whether you've chosen it and you have control over that activity. And the most important thing is that, yes, you want to be able to enjoy the moments of your life, but to feel that kind of joy and that play and that release and being fully involved in the moment, it requires more than bits and scraps of time.
John DeGraff, I hear Bridget Schulte talk about time confetti, and I wonder, how does that connect to the phrase that we've all heard since childhood, time is money? I mean, Bridget seems to be talking about that time really isn't useful as we experience that we distort it when we try to put a monetary value on it.
Well, I think that's true. I'd have to say that we really need to start thinking of time as more than money. That time is really the stuff of life, and that there's a big trade off when we trade our time for money. And in many cases, it's not the best trade off to make. We see this continually in the United States, that when offered the choice in polling, most Americans will choose money over time, something like 80% when asked if they want more time or more money, even when they're very, very busy, will choose money. By contrast, it's almost the opposite in Europe, not quite 80%, but more Europeans will choose more time than more money. And I think there are a number of reasons for that. Number one, we need money here more in many ways, largely because salaries are increasingly low for a large segment of the population. Inequality has made it much harder to keep up, especially as prices for necessities like housing and education and all of those things continue to rise. And so there's the sense that we don't, in healthcare, that we don't have enough constantly, that we're always on the edge, and so the trade-off seems like a good one. The second thing is that we don't really experience time, so it is not actually a surprise that the Danes, who already got 5 weeks of vacation a year by law, had a general strike to get a six-week vacation, and Americans who have zero vacation by law and only 1 or 2 weeks as a median for what they get or take in this country don't seem to care whatsoever about vacation time. So what we see is that when people experience time, when they have it, there's a good case study that I like to mention in California, where workers in one county in 2009 were required to cut their working week to 4 days and their salary was commensurately reduced because of budget cuts in California. Now, those workers went nuts about this. I mean, they were screaming and hollering and picketing and doing everything. But the county supervisor said, well, we just don't have the budget. We're going to do this rather than lay people off. 2 years later, the same workers, when offered the opportunity to go back to 5 days a week with more money or stay at 4 days a week with less money, voted 71% to 29% to stick with the four-day work week because they had actually experienced what the time meant in their lives and how wonderful it was to have that feeling of freedom. So I think that's an important thing. As we work more and more and get more and more trapped into this, we're less even aware of how important time would be to us.
Wonderful story for us. We need to take a quick break right now. When we come back, we'll continue to talk about the modern time crunch and how we got here. And we'd love for you to join the conversation. What do you think is to blame for this feeling many of us have that we're starved for time? Is it our labor laws? Is it in our heads? Lots to talk about. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about busyness, the frantic, frenetic pace of daily life in the modern world. My guests are former Washington Post reporter Bridget Schulte, author of Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time, and John DeGraff, documentary filmmaker and executive director of Take Back Your Time, an organization that seeks to do just that. Listeners, what are your thoughts? You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Bridget Schulte, you have written, quote, somewhere around the end of the 20th century, busyness became not just a way of life, but a badge of honor, close quote. Explain that.
Right. Well, you know, you'd mentioned that in the 1930s, you know, back in the early 20th century, the way people showed their status, the way they showed how important they were, was by how much time they had, the leisure time that they had. You know, you think of the idle rich, and people thought that that was a status symbol, to have time for vacation, to have time for your family, to have time. And then really when you look at where we are right now, even when you think about how you talk to each other, it's like, how are you doing? Oh, so fried. We're so busy. You know, you look at people's Facebook posts and it looks like, you know, they're flying all around and they're busy all the time and they're doing amazing things all the time. There is really no, if you talk to somebody about, well, I haven't done anything or I'm not doing anything. I've got nothing planned. It's like, wow, what a loser, or you're lazy, or you're a slacker. And so I really wanted to understand, because that's certainly how I felt. Days would go by and it would be filled with stuff from the to-do list. But then at the end of the day, I couldn't really tell you what it was I'd done. I used to call it being kind of stuck in virtuous busyness, always checking stuff off your to-do list, never thinking like, well, what is even on my to-do list and who's deciding what should be on it? So I wanted to understand that, and I found a researcher who has spent a lot of time looking at busyness and the fast pace of life. And she's in North Dakota, and I called her up. I said, you're crazy. You're kidding me. In North Dakota, people are feeling really busy? And she said, oh, yeah. And what she does is she looks at holiday letters that people send, and she's got a whole archive from several decades that she's been looking at. Her name's Anne Burnett at North Dakota State University. So I spent a day with her, and we went through her archive. And I tell you, you really can see this progression over the decades.
Let me make sure I'm understanding. When you say holiday letters, you're saying like the kind of letter people put into their Christmas card or year-end card.
Exactly.
This is what we've been up to. Okay.
Yeah, exactly what we've been up to. And you can see several decades ago it was, we're so grateful that you're in our lives. We're thinking, this is a time for reflection and connecting with other people. And then over time, you just see how they become these brag sheets for how much they're doing. One letter is like, I drive 100 miles a day in carpools. And, at the end of the day, I feel smushed against the door. And all of them are just like, faster and faster and more and more. Like one wrote, ever faster the planets spin. And it was interesting because, you know, she looks at language and, you know, it started to hit her that these are people making a conscious choice or even an unconscious choice to be busy as a way to show their status. And she thought, you know, and her theory is at some point we have made being busy the way we show our status, the way we show how important we are, the way we show how we fit in.
Interesting. Sean has called us from Gettysburg. Sean, welcome to Midday.
Thanks, Sheila. I appreciate you having me. And Bridget and John, this conversation is really passionate. I'm really passionate about. I spent the last 12 years working in private industry, and I'm 36. I got 3 kids. I've worked really hard, but I was putting 80 hours in a week, at least 80 hours, and I got to a point where although I was financially happy, I could not enjoy a moment of it, let alone I always felt that the more money I made, the more money I spent. So it wasn't really as though I was getting that far ahead. What I ended up doing was I took a job. I moved my family from Salt Lake all the way across the country to Gettysburg, and took a job with the government. I work 40 hours a week now. I get to enjoy my young kids and the happiness that they bring into my life. I get to be a father again and a husband. And instead of me always portraying myself as what my career was, this is what my title is. I'm now starting to shift and portray myself as more of a husband and more of a father. So I definitely value the conversation. It was the hardest decision I ever made to walk away from 30,000 plus a year in order to do it. But in the long run, I know that my children's happiness, my happiness, my wife's happiness is exponentially grown. And to be able to just stop at the end of the day and sit on my porch and watch, you know, the sunset or the sunrise, it's unbelievable. These are little things that I didn't realize how wonderful this world really can be until I mellowed out.
Sean, I really appreciate your sharing your story with us. And John DeGraff, I want to ask you to respond to Sean, but first let's hear from Joan in Lutherville. Joan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila.
Hi.
I think that as time has gone on, we as Americans, and just maybe aging people, we take on more and more in our lives. And, you know, it starts out you're a single person and you have yourself to take care of and a job. And then you meet a guy and then you're putting together some type of a home life, something that's creative, social. As a homemaker, you're in charge of the plans, you know, that the couple is involved in, the condition of the house that you're bringing people into. How does your garden look? And then come the children. And the list gets longer and longer with their activities and their schooling costs and their wardrobes. I guess what I'm leading up to is that as time goes on, we take on so many more things. We don't know how to give anything up.
You're saying things that cost us.
That cost us money.
Time.
And the time has to be paid for, the things that we are investing in, our children, our home, et cetera. That costs money, and therefore the job it's hard to sacrifice hours at the job. And so I think one of the biggest problems our social structure has is we don't know how to give up what it is we have in place.
John,
and I think I'd love to hear a comment or comments from your speaker.
I would, too. Joan, I appreciate your raising that. So, John DeGraff, Sean told us that the financial hit has been worth it for him where he is now. Joan is saying it could be hard to make that choice. How does this strike you?
I think both are true, and I really applaud Sean for making the decision that he made, because it is a hard one to make, but I think it does pay off for many, many people. And I think for many people, they can make that kind of personal choice, and it's wonderful that they do it, and that's exciting to see. On the other hand, I think Joan is absolutely right that there are these structural impediments. And the fact is, when we talk about the whole world being busy, it's true that the world is busier than it was, but it's not true that it's as busy as the United States. For example, A recent study was done by Professor Jennifer Glass at the University of Texas, exploring the levels of well-being and happiness, the sense of happiness, among parents and non-parents in the United States and in Northern European countries. And she found an enormous gap in that in the United States, parents are significantly less happier than non-parents. They're busy, they're stressed, they're all of these kind of things. The opposite is actually true in Northern Europe, and it's the case because those cultures are supportive of parents and of families. We talk a lot in the United States about family values, but it's hard to say that we value families when we are the only nation in the world, except for Papua New Guinea, that doesn't, for example, even provide a guaranteed maternity leave for moms when they have a baby. That we're really the only country in the world that doesn't provide paid sick days by law for people, or vacation time. And this is very, very few countries, very tiny countries besides us that don't provide vacation time. The interesting thing is, and I'll end this quickly, but the interesting thing is that in 1910, President William Howard Taft, and you can find the July 31st, 1910 version of the New York Times, and you can see this, actually said that Americans should have 2 to 3 months of vacation time a year in order to restore themselves and get out in nature and take care of their families and all of these things. That was over 100 years ago when we were about a tenth as productive as we are today. And now it's not only can we not have 2 or 3 months, we can't have 2 or 3 weeks. What has happened? Why have we put all of our focus on the money and the stuff and the productivity and not understood how important time and relaxation and leisure is for us? And I think Bridget's book is just wonderful in getting out these points and these ideas. So I certainly highly recommend that.
I'm going to turn to Bridget in just a minute. I just want to remind listeners they're listening to Midday on WYPR. That was John DeGraff, executive director of Take Back Your Time, and Bridget Schulte, author of Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time, is our other guest. You can join this conversation with an email to midday@wypr.org or a phone call to 410-662-8780. So Bridget Schulte, John wrapped up his comment by saying, why are we in this situation?
Right. And, you know, believe me, when I first started working on this book, I didn't think it could change. I thought that this is what we needed to do. We had this great economy. This is just what it took to be number one in America. And I could not have been more wrong. And I think what's really important for people to understand when we think about busyness, it's really important to understand that it really comes from two things. And one is that we have a social structure, like Joan was talking about. We have social policies. We have workplace cultures that are really out of sync with how we live now. Our labor policies were all passed in the 1930s, when the world was a very different place. We didn't have globalization. We tended to have more breadwinner, homemaker families. We have very few families like that. The majority of children today are being raised in families where both parents work or they have a single parent. About 1 in 5 children are born in those more traditional breadwinner homemaker families. And yet all of our laws, all of our policies, and frankly our culture is all oriented to support that family that really doesn't exist anymore. And so that's a big part of it, is that part of the overwhelm and this busyness comes from this real disconnect between what we expect people to do and how we expect them to live and how they really are living. I was very struck when Sean was talking about how this was a tough decision for him. It was a real sense of losing his identity to go from being this kind of workaholic and putting in all these crazy hours. You know, we do get our sense of identity from work. And I think what's really important to understand is then that fuels the personal choices that we feel we can make, so that there is this element of personal choice. But I want people to understand that they're really constrained choices, because we all live in this culture. And so if we are choosing busyness, it's because everything around us is sort of pushing us in that direction. So a lot of times it's like a non-choice choice. We feel like we really don't have the choice to pull back and not be busy. You know, we have these intensive parenting norms. And some of that came from the mommy wars and this feeling that it was a terrible thing for women to go to work and that you were abandoning your children. And so there's been all this stigma and guilt that then has fueled, like, basically mothers overdoing to the point where the time studies show working mothers today, even when they work full-time, are spending more time with their kids, more interactive time, more intensive time than stay-at-home moms did in the 60s and 70s. And that seems impossible. How could that even happen? I didn't believe it when I first saw that. And then when you really look at the numbers and you see that women have given up time for sleep, time for personal care, time with other adults, and time for themselves, they've spent all their leisure time with their children, and now men are beginning to do that. Fathers are beginning to do that. And while on the one hand it's wonderful that there is more involvement of men and fathers in care and caregiving, it's really not good for anybody that we're on this kind of merry-go-round of more and more work, trying to pack as much as we can in this very short, intensive time at home. And so I think it's time for all of us to kind of step back and say, you know, what is important? What are the structures that we need, the workplace cultures that we need to support not just families, but anybody who wants to have time time for life, time for an identity outside of work. And then, when I go back to the first point that I make, is there's growing research from productivity research, economic research, that shows when you do that, you actually are more creative and you do better work.
Lots to think about there. We need to take a quick break, and we've got some callers who want to be part of this conversation whom I will talk to as soon as we get back from this, Blake. We're talking about busyness, how we got so busy, what we can do to slow the pace, what policies might we work on changing to make things better. Join the conversation with an email to midday@wypr.org or a phone call to 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. If you're just joining us, we're talking today about busyness, our never-ending obligations, and the tyranny of the to-do list. I'm speaking with Bridget Schulte, author of Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time, and John DeGraff, a documentary filmmaker who's explored these issues for decades. He's executive director of an organization called Take Back Your Time. You can join this conversation. Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Linda has called us from Towson. Linda, welcome to Midday.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Can't quite hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you fine, Linda.
Oh, there you are. Great. One of the things that I haven't really heard spoken about a lot during this conversation is the fact that employers will actually sort of ration out your time. I was given 3 weeks, because I was in a professional job, I was given 3 weeks per year, but only two people were allowed from the department to be off at any given time. So it wound up that you could never really... you wouldn't have choice of your time, or sometimes you couldn't even take the time that you to use up all of your time. And then where I work now, I've moved to a school system, and we get one personal leave day during a 10-month school year, and we have 2 sick days that we can use for personal time. And you're given an occurrence when you use the sick days, even though they're charged to personal time. And so there's a real limitation about when you are allowed to use time, how you're allowed to use time, how much time you're allowed to use by employers. And you can't really negotiate those things when you're in an interview, because then you're going to look like you're not going to be there. And then there's all this pressure that, well, you're not here, you're not part of the team. There's not many of us, we're down to the bone, we need everybody to be here. So there's all this pressure to be at work as well.
Linda, very interesting points. John DeGraff, what about that? Even if it looks on paper like a workplace values vacation, it could be that it turns out you really cannot take that time.
Well, I think that happens very frequently. It happens in many, many ways. And I think it's something that doesn't nearly happen as often, say, in Europe, where you're really required to take your vacation time, and the companies that don't push you out the door can be in trouble for it. They do things like cross-training and other things to make sure that workers can cover for each other and that the work gets done, or they simply shut down for a short period of time, which we used to do in this country. I mean, small businesses used to simply close down for 2 or 3 weeks in the summer, and everybody took a vacation. Now we seem to believe that we have to be open 24/7, 52 weeks a year, all of this sort of thing, and it seems crazy to me because other economies aren't operating that way, and they're doing fine. I wanted to come back just for a second to something that Bridget pointed out, which was this whole thing about parents spending more time with their kids, and that's absolutely true. I was doing research looking at the data from UNICEF and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development on the well-being of children in rich countries, and we do terribly poorly. I mean, in both cases, we're about number 26 out of 28 or 29 countries in how well our kids are doing. And I was thinking, is that a factor of parents not spending time with kids because we're working so long? And then I looked at the data, and we actually spend more time with our kids than parents in any other country except Australia and Austria. But as Bridget pointed out, this time is kind of busy time. Again, parents are stressed, and they're chauffeuring kids from this activity to that activity or being spectators. They're giving up personal time. They're giving up time with friends. They're not feeling particularly good about this. That stress has passed, and we have kids who are the most stressed in the Western world. And if we look, for example, at the Netherlands, a country which in every survey has the happiest kids with the highest level of well-being, every international survey points that out. These kids have only about one-third as many extracurricular activities as our kids do. They have time to play, and their parents have time to play, and they take time to play. So I think we really need to think about what this is doing to us and to our kids.
Let's talk to Shima, who's calling us from Baltimore. Shima, welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hello, Shima. You're on the air.
Okay. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This is a great conversation. I am actually a professor at the Community College of Baltimore County. I teach leisure in society for my to my students, and one of the things that I make them do is the time study, which is really eye-opening for them. But I also make them do an assignment about unplugging from technology. They have to unplug for 12 hours and write about their experience. And one of the things that I found through that is that a lot of people don't really know what to do with their time when they have to unplug. So just kind of thinking about technology, like our phones and our, you know, the screen time that we have, television, phones, social media, that are really time wasters, and they suck out time from that time that we could be productive. And they really don't, like, the students are really surprised when they see that, that, you know, they have all this extra time if they weren't stuck to their Facebook page or doing Twitter or just kind of, you know, being, they could be more productive, basically, with other things, and that because they would always be like, I'm so busy, but then when they actually look at their time, it's like, well, I'm not as busy as I thought I am, but I have a lot of time that's being wasted or being sucked out.
Shima, I appreciate your making that point. It seems it strikes me as another example, Bridget Schulte, of time confetti.
I think she makes a really good point, too, is that when you do those time studies, they are really eye-opening. You know, we also spend a lot of time watching TV, and people think, well, don't we have a lot of leisure time, and we just make bad choices with it? But really, when you kind of you look a little bit further, a lot of times TV is on as sort of wallpaper in the background, or it's an easy choice because people are so fried when they get home from these long work days, or in the lower wage market, you know, you spend so much time trying to get to work, and then you have these unpredictable schedules, and then maybe you're trying to put together two or three jobs. So we have exhaustion kind of on both ends of the socioeconomic spectrum, you know, and so then when it comes to then making a choice, because to feel that play, to feel that leisure, to have that time, it's you do have to kind of know what to do with it. And that is one of the things that I found over and over again in my reporting, is that people will say, you know, it almost makes them anxious. They don't know what they want to do. They don't know how they would, you know, kind of how they would spend that time. And so then they just either go back to the to-do list, or they'll, you know, pull out the, you know, the iPhone and then start doing social media. So I think what's, you know, it's like we've lost the ability to kind of take a breath and to pause, to think about what's really important, to make time for that, to even sort of figure out. I was talking to somebody just yesterday who said, I don't know what I would do if I had free time. I don't really know how to play anymore. And you hear that a lot. There are people who study play. And what they'll do is they'll give adults these gigantic, like, kindergarten crayons and, like, a notepad, like, with big wide-lined notepads, and just said, we'll just say, write down what you like to do as a kid. What gave you joy as a kid? You know, just try to get your juices flowing to even think about what would you do if you had spare time. And again, I think we don't take those pauses. We don't try to figure that out because we have a culture that does value this, not just work, but overwork. And I just want to reinforce a point that John was making, that, you know, why Americans tend to choose money over time. I mean, think about it. Wages have stagnated. All the economic data shows wages have pretty much stagnated since the 1980s. Productivity, worker productivity, has continued to climb. So people are not enjoying the fruits of their labor. And then when you look at costs, you know, my son's going off to college. The cost of college has increased 1,000%, 1,000% since 1980. I mean, I haven't had 1,000% raise. I don't know who has. So I think we need to be thinking that the busyness and overwhelm comes from a lot of the economic structures that we've set up, and then we get so busy we don't have time to even think about it.
So, Bridget, I think we're hearing sort of the distilled wisdom from what you learned writing your book, that it's about setting priorities if you're going to try to find. If you're going to lose the frantic sense of time, you need to set priorities.
Well, you know, I think that the first thing you've got to do is to have that sense of awareness, to really understand the water that you're swimming in, to understand how much is your choice and how much are you conforming to the culture that values overwork, that devalues play and leisure time, and then really start to kind of take that time, take a time to take a breath and pause. And really think about what's the most important thing in my life today, at work. Take that time and really look at your schedule. And this is hard to do because we tend to want to cram it with stuff. And then, we have this sense of accomplishment when we make it to the end of the day. But you're kind of like washed up on shore. you're like a drowning person. We put so much stuff on there. It's a mindset shift, but it's also, you have to understand, if you're going to push back against that overwork culture, you're going to need some support. You need to find like-minded peers, because it's hard to push against the status quo on your own. So, yeah, pause, set your own priorities, find some, like, a network of support and peers, and really make that time to experience what John was talking about, experience play, experience leisure, even if you have to put it on your calendar, even if it's just for 30 minutes, you can find 30 minutes in the week to do something fun. And then the more you kind of bring that back into your life, the more you kind of reorient your to-do list and you put things that are important to you on it. You know, you put time for yourself on it. You put time for your kids to play, you know, and not go to cello lessons or taekwondo or, drive around like a maniac to get them to somewhere. You know, put some kind of like open space on your calendar. The more you experience that, the more you're going to want that, and the more you're going to reorient your life to make sure that happens.
Yeah,
the more
all of us
do that, the more we'll change our culture.
But you're right. Open space on a calendar sounds subversive somehow. I want to read a part of an email we got from Sandy, who's listening to us in Madison, Wisconsin. And part of what Sandy wrote is, what kind of changes do American employers have to make for their recommendations for individuals to work? I absolutely believe that we should be offering more flexible and generous family leave, but I am truly unsure about how that is supposed to work. Even 6-week maternity leaves have left big holes in the organization I've worked for. How do we support this while also maintaining business productivity without duplicating staff across the board? John DeGraff?
Well, for one thing, I think if we actually shortened the hours of work for people and hired more people, we could reduce our unemployment, which is an issue, and give people who want to work some time to work and solve some of those problems. It's complicated, but I think that's something we really ought to think about. In addition to vacation time and stuff, we really ought to begin thinking about a shorter work week. There's nothing sacred about the 40-hour week. We got it in 1938. That's almost 80 years ago. And we are now four times or more as productive as we were then. It seems that we could use a little of these gains in productivity to get more time rather than simply always more economic growth, which is a threat to the environment. These are a constellation of complex issues. So it would take more time to get into these. But the Europeans and Northern Europeans find a way to do this. And they're not smarter than us. We can figure out how to do these kind of things if we have the political and business will to do them. Now, there are a lot of businesses who are beginning to do the right thing and seeing the value in giving people more vacation time, and I salute them. But this needs to be a cultural change. I want to make one just shameless, not self-promotion, but Take Back Your Time, the organization I run, takebackyourtime.org, we're having a national conference on these issues next month in Seattle, Time Matters National Conference. We'll be looking at all of these kinds of things. We were hoping to have Bridget as our keynote speaker, but she was too busy. But
John.
There are ways that we can do these kinds of things. Other people figure it out. It is not rocket science.
Bridget, we're down to just a couple of minutes, so I want to give you a last word if you'd like. If there's a closing thought that you think can wrap this up. I'm left with, I think, more questions than answers.
Well, I'll just say two things really briefly, and that is to answer the last comment from the listener, she's seen 6-week maternity leave big holes. You know what? This is not rocket science. Human beings need to reproduce, and we have families. Human beings get sick. Human beings need to take care of each other. The fact that what's changed is that we don't have the American wife at home anymore. We don't have the homemaker doing all of that. Everybody's pretty much at work these days, and so it's time for work to catch up to that. And you know what? If you know people are going to get sick, and you know that somebody's, parent is going to need some care, or someone's going to have a child, there are ways to plan for this. So this is not rocket science. This is not hard. I don't want to say it's not hard, but it's like something we can do. We have to put our mind to it. You can plan for these things. It's all about workflow. It's all about cross-training and delegating and planning for it. So it's not difficult. And the second thing I would say about busy, we do have this culture of busyness, but we do have to recognize some of it is a choice. And so, yes, John did invite me very graciously to come out, and I would love to go to that conference. But I also know that I have limited time, that, even though I would love to do that, I have to make some choices. And sometimes choices means you don't get to do everything that you want, even when they're good things. So
our time is limited here, too.
Yeah, and tame basic busyness, you do have to make choices.
Our time is limited, too, and we are flat out of it. But I'm very grateful to you both. I'm grateful to the listeners who called. Author and documentary filmmaker John DeGraff, executive director of Take Back Your Time, which you can find at takebackyourtime.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Bridget Schulte, author of Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time, and director of the Better Life Lab at the New America Think Tank. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And as I said, thanks to our listeners, and thanks to the Baltimore Chef Shop on the Avenue in Hamden, which has provided a sushi lunch today. The Baltimore Chef Shop offers a variety of private events and cooking classes for kids and adults, including baking and international cuisines. Their next sushi class is Saturday, July 30th, 6:30 p.m. More on the web at BaltimoreChefShop.com. And thank you for listening. Tune in tomorrow. For years, Maryland courts held that parental rights were limited to biological and adoptive parents. This month, Maryland's highest court overturned that policy, ruling that adults involved in raising a child may be considered de facto parents. We'll look at the implications for LGBT parents and blended families. That's tomorrow. I'm Sheila Cast. Have a great afternoon. Take a few minutes to breathe.